This is Heidi Crockett. I'm giving a lecture today titled Nutritional Wellness, a Top 10 List for How Patients Can Thrive. And I'm really excited to be giving this lecture because I feel like it exemplifies what I most want to convey to those listening. I have thought of the top 10 recommendations that I would most like to give people. So this is nutrition facts, but from a holistic perspective. And I also go into the neuroscience behind why we basically can't keep our hand out of the cookie jar. So just going deeper, because oftentimes I think people know that they should be eating more vegetables, but they don't make that choice. So I'm trying to explain today a little bit why and what's going on. Again, education is about empowerment. So the more information I have, the more empowered I am to truly choose. So today I'm going to present some new information to you that you might not have heard before. And my intention is that this information that I provide brings you one step closer to achieving optimal mental health and nutritional wellness, so you may be more empowered in your future food choices. So I start the presentation with a quote by Dr. Daniel Siegel, who is a well-known doctor, began the branch of interpersonal neurobiology, whose research I quote throughout this presentation. And the quote says, "The human brain is a construction project in which genetics supplies the building blocks, but social interaction largely determines how they are put together." So this begins the framework for food, believe it or not. Our social interactions really are involved in how our brain is built and how we are able or not able to make healthy food choices. So before I go into the top 10 list, I need to just do a little basic neuroscience education, and I use Daniel Siegel's definition of optimal mental health and his wellness triangle to define that. So it's a triangle. If you're interested in this, you can Google Daniel Siegel triangle of well-being and it should come up. One tip is interpersonal relationships, or empathic interpersonal relationships. One tip is the integrated brain, and one tip is the coherent mind. And one thing I remind people around this is that this moment, like even as you are listening to me on the computer, say we were making eye contact, that the interpersonal relationship is a thing in and of itself that exists, and that those social interactions very profoundly affect the brain. So that's why social interactions are one tip. And then an integrated brain, I'm going to talk a little bit about that, and a coherent mind. I'm going to define brain and mind here in a minute. Mind is defined as the process that regulates the flow of information and energy. So it's a process. And then the brain is the part of the central nervous system situated within the skull. It includes two cerebral hemispheres, parallel masses of deeply furrowed tissue, as well as the brainstem and the cerebellum. So that's a little bit the integrated brain and the coherent mind and the interpersonal relationships. So in the next slide, I have a picture of a brain. And I just want to talk a little bit about the prefrontal cortex and then the brainstem and the limbic system. So the prefrontal cortex is around your forehead. It's usually there are more furrows there, which means that there's kind of more neurons there. And Daniel Siegel talks about how he calls it the nine functions of the prefrontal cortex. These are functions like empathic listening, response flexibility, fear modulation, basically kind of, they call these things executive functioning, like higher functioning reasoning in the brain, morality, intuition. But you can't access those if the more primal part of the brain, the brain stem and the limbic system, is firing. So this is, you might have heard about this in terms of the flight, fright, freeze mode that happens when you're under stress. Oftentimes the brain will just click on. And when the brain clicks like that, you make decisions in a split second, and they don't involve executive functioning and the higher reasoning of the prefrontal cortex. They are deeply embedded in your brain in the stress response, and they can't be controlled oftentimes, like when you're reacting from that stress place. So a lot of what the research is coming to find about with the brain is that unless we're able to engage in activities that enhance the functions of our prefrontal cortex, and I'll get into those in a minute, like meditation or talking with a therapist, things that encourage us to think about thinking and that encourage us to slow down and to kind of reframe our thoughts. Unless we engage in those activities, that we're going to end up just being reactive and using our more primal brain, particularly when we're under stress. We have to train our brain to be differently. And I'm going to talk how we can do that today. So I'm going to go to the next slide, and I have a picture of a neuron, which is, there's an axon, which is the kind of long part of it, and then there's the dendrites, which is right around the soma. So it's really hard to describe this on the tape. But the neuron, I think what's really, really important to know about the neuron is that, I mean, you have an incredible number of these, I think, and they connect together in your brain, and the axons and the dendrites of the neurons are thicker, and there are more of them from your childhood, stuff from your childhood, programming from your childhood. And I think in his book, Mindsight, Daniel Siegel calls it the superhighway, and that's what I'm going to call it in this presentation. It's those pre-programmed responses from when we're younger that I just cannot underestimate the power of those. And what they found in neuroscience is that it's like the superhighway. It's where you're going to go if you're not really able to slow down and think through what choice you want to make. It's the superhighway. You just do it automatically. It's easy. It's what your brain does when you go in, when you're under stress, when the limbic system is firing. It's just bam. And the opposite of that is what Siegel calls neural networks, paved neural networks, and you create those. So most significant about the new neural networks is the fact that you have to pave the road yourself. So I like that analogy because it's kind of like if you think about a dirt road, going down a dirt road, how long it takes to go down a dirt road, it's going to take much, much, much more time than just going down the highway. So that's basically the analogy, thinking of your brain when you're attempting to make new food choices or new choices in your life across the board with your emotional responses to things. It's important, I think, to grow compassion with ourselves when we fall back into habit and to know that we're doing the best we can, but we've really been programmed to be a certain way. Not that we can't change that. And Dr. Siegel is very, neuroscience has found that a neurogenesis and neuroplasticity is possible throughout life, the lifespan of an adult. So that means neuroplasticity and neurogenesis is the capacity to create new neural nets and to repair. Those can be done at any time in your life. So you can generate new thought patterns and change your brain at any time. It doesn't stop when your brain stops developing, supposedly about the age of 25. And these are some quotes. Our brain's memory is altered by each revisiting of an experience. So I really like that. That's kind of what I'm trying to get at when I talk about all of this. We're recreating our brain all the time, and we're recreating our food habits every day with the choices we make. And another quote here, more specifically, the actual process of describing and naming an experience is associated with a balancing of activity between the right and left hemispheres of the brain, which allows for a more complex level of integration. So just naming something, again, begins the process of that brain integration that I'm talking about, which is part of the optimal mental health triangle that I named beforehand. A lot of what Siegel talks about, he talks about the eight domains of integration, which is just, it's so fascinating what he says. I feel like it really brings together a lot of what science has found out today, and then what has sort of been practiced before, but hasn't been able to be supported by science. There's a lot of stuff going on around mindfulness in the last 5 years. So I'm going to go to the next slide. And then the next slide just has a picture of a highway, and I say, what is your super highway? So for those listening, just think about that. What is it that's a big trigger for you? For me, grief. If I feel like I've had some kind of significant loss in my life, I tend to isolate myself and lose my appetite. So that would be an example of a very large trigger that I know that I have and that I can be aware of. I mean, there's triggers across the board that we all have. And if I were in a room full of people, I would ask other people to kind of name some of their examples of it so we can get a framework. But I think we all know what that means, the superhighway. What is pre-programmed in us that we seem not to be able to escape? So Daniel Siegel, in terms of this wellness triangle, he talks about the FAS, F-A-S, flow down the river of integration, or the river of brain integration. And the F-A-S, the F stands for flexibility, the A stands for adaptability, and the S stands for stability. So he says that in order to really be in the space where our brain is integrated, where we're not just totally going by our adrenal fight-flight response, while we're able to calm ourselves and use the prefrontal cortex functions more, we're able to be more integrated. We have a good combination of flexibility, adaptability, and stability. So what I like about his analogy is that on either river bank of this sort of optimal integration flow, he says chaos or rigidity results. And I think these are really good terms to keep in mind as we think about our food choices, which I'm going to get to here in a minute. I'm going to have us ask about that. I'm going to talk about, so normally he says chaos is when there's too much flexibility, and rigidity results when there's too much stability. So again, you want the sort of optimal flow. So finally, I'm going to get to the top 10 list. Here's number 10. I should do a little drum roll. Be willing to change what you eat. That's number 10. So rigidity around eating is very common, and eating choices are largely influenced by, I say, five things: habit, culture, advertising, like the dieting industry is a $60 billion a year industry, also chemically addictive aspects of food like MSG, and then stress. So again, I'm going to name those: habit, culture, advertising, the chemical aspects of food, and stress. And then I have this quote that I like from Dr. Haas's book in 2006. The quote is, "People in general have become out of touch with nature and possess little instinctual or rational basis for their diet, and as a result can become emotional about it. Thus, they may defend their diet and resist suggestions for change." So this is what I'm talking about in terms of being willing to change what you eat. "Many people in the United States are not familiar with natural foods and do not know how to maintain good health. They eat mainly what is marketed by corporate America." So I think that quote kind of sums up very basically the state of where we're at right now in this country. And I'm going to go into be willing to change what you eat. And on this slide, I have a picture of the river, and I have chaos and rigidity on either side. And then at the top of the river, I ask you to consider being able to effortlessly change what you eat. So ask yourself, do I need more stability in my life, or do I need more flexibility in order to be able to change what I eat? And oftentimes, of course, it's both around eating. There'll be periods of times when people are able to maintain a very rigid diet. And then I'm going to talk about this here in a minute, how actually diets don't work. It's probably the largest predictor of weight gain in the long run. But again, so people will have major rigidity around it, and then they'll have chaos come up where they're not able to sort of maintain control around their eating. And again, we want integration. We want to find a middle path around all of this. So some different techniques that Siegel talks about, if you tend towards chaos, he talks about name it to tame it as a strategy, and a feeling is not a fact. So people who might have more chaos is whatever is happening, it seems like that is the only thing in existence that's happening, and it's so overwhelming, and they're not able to make any other choice other than this strong emotion or fill in the blank, that it's just, you know, their life feels chaotic. They're not able to maintain perspective. They're not able to grab that stability that they need. So if you can name it to tame it, if you can name what you need in the moment, or if you can name like the emotional state that's happening to you, and also if you can remind yourself that a feeling is not a fact, it's just a way to kind of bring together. That person probably tends to be a little more right-brained, because the left brain is logic, linear, literal. It's the left brain. The right is more creative. And so also, if you tend towards rigidity, widen your capacity for taking in others' facial expressions, other people's emotions, and other people's nonverbal signals. And try practicing body and breath awareness. That's going to be good for either side. Whichever riverbank you want, increased integration of thoughts and emotions and the backdrop of calm whenever you're making decisions.